This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Follow a Standard Orbit, Mr. Chekhov, and take us home.
Hi, sir.
It is the word of Landru.
Joy to you, friends, and thanks for joining us here on Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated show to the original series. My name is Drew, or Landru, and this is my co-host Mike from Commentary Trek Stars.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, buddy. And today, we're also joined by Jeff Harlan, creator of Trekopedia and frequent guest star on Warp 5.
Hi, how are you doing?
We're doing okay. Yeah, you seem to be on Warp 5 a lot. You're like the Shran of Warp 5. Would that be an accurate assessment?
He's really pink for being Shran.
That's true. That's true. But well, maybe it's just the lighting, you know?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I guess if you got it like a red gel on him,
yeah,
he would.
I got color corrected by the guys at Desilu.
Yeah, there we go.
So
he's not supposed to be blue. White.
So now Trekopedia, this is your website. Now you're on the network and everything like that, doing some stuff here and there. But I don't know how familiar people are with your website, and it's a fascinating website because it is so expansive. I'm just like, it's the thing that everyone talks about doing, and it's like, you know, it would be really cool if we did this, and then you look at like what would the work that would be involved, and you go, nah, I'm not doing that. And yet you're doing it. But I guess before we get into what the website is, let's talk about you a little bit. So now you're I'm guessing you're a fan of Star Trek.
No, I completely hate it.
You've seen like an episode or two on cable, or once or twice maybe, like in reruns or something.
Yeah, I have all of the Blu-ray sets. I got everything that's not on Blu-ray. I have on DVD, and it was before it came out on DVD. I had the animated series on VHS.
I had it on Laserdisc.
Well, I never had a Laserdisc player, so.
Oh, yeah. You're missing out. That's the best.
Okay.
And I have all of the books, all of the comics. I've got all of the games, everything.
Now, when you say you have all of the books and all of the comics, like, do you mean you have like a lot of them, or do you mean you have like all of them?
Yeah. What percentage are we talking about here?
I have every game. I have every comic, and I'm missing all of about six of the books.
Man, if you're down to like six, I mean, are these like collector's
things? What are you looking
things?
For? I've got a used bookstore down the street with like 100 Star Trek books, and if I buy them in bulk, it gives me a discount.
About the only ones I don't have are the Deep Space Nine young adult books from the mid-90s. Those have been harder to find.
Oh, okay. That's impressive. That is impressive, to say the least.
Now, have you read them all?
Most of them.
Okay.
I still have a few that I haven't gotten to yet.
So let's go back to the very beginning. Like, how did you discover Star Trek in the first place?
That would be my parents' fault.
Oh, it usually is.
Isn't it always?
Yeah. They were original Star Trek fans when it was first on TV. They were both in middle school, high school at the time. And so they then introduced me to Star Trek and science fiction in general. I just remember growing up, we were always watching something science fiction. I was born in 1977, so I was 2 years old when the motion picture came out. And we went and saw that in the theater. And I've said this one before, but I spent a couple of weeks going around trying to give everybody neck pinches after that. And I just idolized, I idolized Spock. He was my hero growing up. And, you know, we also watched other science fiction. We watched Battlestar Galactica. We watched, pretty much anything science fiction. Doctor Who, Blake Seven, everything. my dad even put up a poster, you know, the wallpaper in the bedroom that my brother and I had, and it was, the wallpaper was a photo taken by the Apollo mission from the moon with the Earth rising above the moon.
Wow.
And that was our wallpaper. And my dad makes models that look like they're actual miniaturized airplanes and spaceships. And so he made like the fighters, the Cylons and the Battlestar Galactica Vipers, and hung them up on wires above this so that it looks like they're having a space battle in front of our wallpaper.
That's wow. Pretty awesome. Yeah.
And you know, that's kind of how I grew up, was just constantly surrounded by
no
science
hope,
fiction.
As my parents always told me.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry, we never even gave you a chance.
Yeah. I was the New Hope because I came out at the same year as the original Star Wars.
Oh, that's true.
Which
didn't have
that
subtitle
one.
When it came out.
No, it didn't. It didn't until I was about a year old.
Your birthday is not May 25th, is it?
No, it's November 25th.
Well, close enough. Close enough, I guess.
Yeah.
So, okay, so you were an original series fan, and
yeah, I grew up with it. It was my first love.
Was it... You know, because of your age and everything.
Don't tell my wife.
Because of your age and everything, were you more like in tune with the movies, or like by the time you saw that first one, were you just like, I need to watch all the original series episodes? And you know, by the time the second one came out, you were just like, whatever, this is the next adventure. You know,
I know I'd be putting a lot on him, but he was two. And I don't know if he was just like, let's watch the entire series. There are, 80 episodes? Also, Mama, Dada.
Hey, you know, he may have been advanced for his age. Yeah.
I do know that we watched a lot of Star Trek at the time. Battlestar Galactica was on the air, so we watched a lot of that, too. I just watched all of it. You know, whatever was on, we were watching it. So by the time I was two, I probably had already seen the entire original series.
I guess, Mike. He definitely has us beat. I guess what I'm getting at is, Drew and I, for example, you know, while we have seen the original series and everything growing up, certainly... because of our experiences or whatever and the way that we were sort of like trained, we naturally sort of gravitated towards the movies. And as much as we loved the original series, the movies were more of our first love.
As you can tell from the last 95 episodes.
Yeah, where all we talk about is like those six movies. But my question is like, did you have that sort of like affinity for the movie specifically, or were you more just sort of like, it's all good, and you didn't really discriminate between, let's say, movies versus show?
I didn't really see them as being different. It was just more of an extension. It's more like, you know, you have the original 80 episodes and then six more. Yeah. And then there's also the animated series.
There is the animated series. Yeah, Drew hasn't seen the entire animated series yet, but...
I'm like halfway done.
Excellent.
It's,
I'll
get there. The animated series is actually my wife's favorite Star Trek.
That's interesting. That's a very interesting take.
Does she like any of the rest of it, that would mean something? Or is it just like, hey, that's funny?
No, we've watched the first two seasons of the original series and a few episodes of the other shows here and there, and we've watched about half of the animated series, and she says she likes that one the best.
Interesting.
That's
interesting.
Fantastic.
I love the animated series conceptually, but in terms of execution, it's the worst. It really is the worst.
If they could take the recordings of the actors' voices and redo the animation with...
Yep.
The actual music from the original series?
No.
I think that would be ideal.
No, no, no. You guys are all wrong. I don't know how many times I have to tell you guys, you are all wrong. What you need to do is you need to take the original animation and you need to write good episodes and then apply good stories to that exact style. Don't change the style at all. Then
yesteryear wasn't a good episode.
Yesteryear was the only good episode, and it is better than most episodes of Star Trek. I will give you that. But...
And the Slaver Weapon's the only episode of the original with no Kirk in it.
Nope, not there no yet. Spoilers, jeez.
Wait, there's no Kirk in that one? No. I didn't even know. I'm going to have to check that out.
It completely takes place starting off with the shuttlecraft and only the people that are in the shuttle.
Really? Oh my god, I have to go back and
Shatter
watch that
wanted
again.
The week off. I'm not coming in. I don't need to talk to you.
I have to check that out again. That's really interesting. I didn't even know that there was... You know, wow. I'm going to have to rewatch that episode for sure. Wow. Cool.
Now look what you've done. Mike's going to rewatch an episode of the animated series.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks.
You're welcome.
So then Next Generation, you were, you know, like prime age 10 and
a
fan.
Oh, man, you were the perfect age.
Yeah, I was 10. It was... let's see. Actually, it was right before my 10th birthday when it came out. It was like two months before.
So you were just like, oh my God, this is the best thing ever.
Or were you one of those, this, you know, there's no Kirk. What do I care about this?
This is like the Slaver Weapon.
This is the Slaver Weapon of Star Trek.
Yeah, they made like a whole series. Yes, the Slaver Weapon of Star Trek. That's good. Anyway.
No, I was pumped for it. I mean, we had like terrible reception. We had a black and white TV at my house still at this point.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, we didn't get a color TV until about a year or so later. So we went to a friend's house in the next state over to go watch Encounter at Farpoint.
As a whole family.
As the whole family.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, see, I didn't grow up with that. Like, all my family was like, what are you doing? Like, why are you watching this? I don't understand, you know? Why do you believe in these weird alien thingies? And I'm like, but it's... I'm not even going to try. I'm not even going to try. Never mind. I'm just going to go back and watch some more Star Trek. I'm going to go back and watch the Slaver Weapon again. So that's cool. So you were a fan? I mean, once you saw it, though, were you like, yeah, this is good stuff? Or were you like...
Yeah, I liked it. I had very limited television options at home, so I tried to get over to my friends' houses and see it with them, and occasionally the best we could do was if I couldn't come over, they would set up their tape recorders in front of the TV, and I would listen to it later.
Yeah. I remember those days. I would do that with the Next Gen and Deep Space Nine. Well, all of them, really. Like, I would record them off TV, and then I would record them on an audio tape and then listen to them while we were driving on, like, road trips in the car.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. I bow before. This is incredible.
Oh, that's nothing. Josh, the guy who started the Delta Quadrant, he and his brother have gone through and ripped the audio from all... like 700 and was it 26 episodes? Is that what it is?
Something like that, yeah.
How do you not know this?
Goodness gracious.
So they've got like them all on their iPhones, like the entire library of Star Trek. They just like turn them on, like listen to them like podcasts.
Like audio dramas.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's interesting. It's cool. Yeah.
That's how a lot of the lost episodes of Doctor Who got recovered, was people doing the same thing.
Yeah, that's cool. So Next Gen, and then I take it when Deep Space Nine came on, you were just as much of a fan and all that stuff, and or
by that
not.
Time I was living in Germany because my family's military.
Oh.
And right at the end of season one of Next Gen, we ended up moving to Germany, and the American television station over there, we had one television station, and it was about a year behind on everything. So I got to watch season one of Next Gen all over again.
Oh, well, that's kind of cool.
And a refresher.
Considering.
I just remember good. After Naked Now aired, I went to swim practice with the swim team. I was in fifth grade. And one of my friends comes up to me and he's like, oh my God, did you see that? And I was like, yeah, that was the second time for me.
Time travel.
Did you start spoiling the rest of the season for them? Or
wait till you see the totally racist next episode.
But yeah, okay. So there was a bit of a lag with that and with Deep Space Nine as well, or
yeah, they kept playing Next Gen on the TV over there, but I don't think they actually got Deep Space Nine. Only reason I was able to see it was because I had family back in the U.S. that was taping the episodes and mailing them to me.
Nice,
yeah, that's awesome.
So I'd get tapes with like about 6 to 8 episodes each. And I just like plow through.
You were the first binge watcher.
Yeah, I mean, it was like Netflixing, but about, you know, 30 years early.
So how long did that last for? At what point were you able to watch these things as they aired again?
I moved back to the U.S. in 95, so it was not long after Voyager started.
Okay. And by that point, were you caught up with Deep Space Nine? And
no, I was about a year behind, so I actually had to watch the reruns to catch up.
Okay, so Voyager started. Watch that. I take it you watched pretty much all of that and all of Enterprise, correct?
Like, yeah.
Okay, so do you have a favorite show?
I kind of see them all as being parts of the same whole.
Yeah,
it's, I mean, I grew up with the original series, and so I mean, like I said, that's kind of my first love when it comes to all the different shows. But I like them all. I've been on Warp 5 several times. We've talked about all the things that I loved about that, and usually it's how it relates to the original series is what I love the best about it.
yeah me too, honestly. I mean, I think it's a solid show on the whole, but like what they were doing in season 4 in particular, I think was pretty awesome. You know,
I'll get there.
Yeah, I missed parts of season 2 and season 3 of Enterprise because I was in the military at that point, and that was right about the same time that I got sent off to a little country called Iraq. And
never heard of
it. Yeah. No, wars are how Americans learn geography. So
it's true. It's true.
So I spent a little time over there in the sandbox and came back and had to catch up again.
Yeah. But I guess it was easier in the modern era, right?
Yeah. I also was stationed in Las Vegas, so I'd go down and hang out at Star Trek The Experience, and I was one of the regulars. They called us the Morns.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. And I had a seat that I always sat in, which happened to be pretty much the same one that Morin always sat in.
Excellent. I one of my biggest regrets is I never got to see The Experience.
Yeah,
it sounds like
same
it
here.
Sounds like the most amazing thing.
Yeah,
in the
when
world.
When they had our my going away party when I transferred from Las Vegas to another base in Turkey, they had my going away party at The Experience.
That's awesome.
We had some of the actors that were in costume going around The Experience would come up to say goodbye to me because they all knew me.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah, that's cool. It makes me so, and I mean the fact that they like closed it just as like Star Trek was taking off again. It's like, what are you thinking?
I remember being excited when King's Island had, like when they got bought out by Paramount and they had, like, you know, next to Scooby-Doo and stuff, because they were still partly owned by Hanna-Barbera. So they're right next to Scooby-Doo is, you know, there's a Klingon and a guy in Monster Maroon, you know, just walking around. They're in character. They're like the, you know, Donald Duck of King's Island. And they had, you know, like some Federation-based, you know, transporter pads and stuff. And I thought it was the coolest thing in the world, but I was a little young for Vegas at the time.
We all are.
Yeah, I went and I did the Star Trek video thing over at Universal Studios in Orlando back.
Yeah, I did that too. Yeah,
and I never did that.
Yeah, so that was the first time I ever wore a Monster Maroon.
Mm.
And
but not the last.
No, it's one of my favorite uniforms. I ended up making one, and I've got a photo of myself on the bridge at The Experience in it.
Excellent.
And
which
I just
do they have at The Experience?
They had the Enterprise D bridge.
Okay. Yeah.
And I wore it there for one of the Vegas conventions. I ended up taking like 6th place in the costume contest.
Oh wow!
And after the contest was over, I went upstairs to the bridge set, and got my picture taken. I was like, I'm in costume. I might as well. Why not? And, you know, how many times is this going to happen? And I sit, they have everybody standing behind the camera so that nobody's in the shot. I sit down in the chair and everybody just starts applauding.
Cool. Cool. I mean, why wouldn't you, you know? That's awesome. That's awesome. So, okay. Post-Enterprise, we have the JJ-verse. I know that this is a very polarizing subject, but since it's related to the original series and part of our territory, what are your thoughts on Star Trek '09 and Into Darkness?
Well, they're alternate realities, and we've had that ever since the first season of the original. I mean, we had Lazarus show up from the antimatter universe. Why not? I don't have a problem with it as long as I just remember it's not the original universe. It's another universe that looks very similar to it. So
look at this guy with all his logic.
Yeah. Yeah. And things are going to be similar. Things are going to be different. And that's just how it is. One thing I do like is that it's bringing a lot of new fans in. My wife had never really been into Star Trek before. She'd seen a little bit here and there. We went and we saw those movies together, and now she watches Star Trek with me, and she has a greater appreciation for it all.
Exactly.
I mean, it makes sense. It really does.
Yeah. I mean, we finished watching Into Darkness. We went back to my place. This was before we were married, and we watched Into Darkness, went back to my place, sat down and watched Space Seed and Star Trek 2.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Because she wanted to know more about Khan, because Into Darkness didn't explain who he was.
Not at all. Not in the slightest.
So, what did you think about them as movies? You know, I mean, like when you went in 2009 to see Star Trek '09, and you sat down in the theater and you're like, oh my God, Star Trek is back. And you came out of the theater. What was your reaction?
I was so excited that I wrote this gushing blog post about it, because I got to see it a week before it opened in theaters.
Cool.
Yeah.
And I wrote this completely spoiler-filled blog post gushing the hell out of about it, and had to go back and edit it for everybody that hadn't been able to see it yet, because there were only about 200 of us that got to see it a week early.
Yeah.
Oops.
Well, that's cool. And then Into Darkness.
I saw that.
Okay. So, yeah. So you, there was the instantaneous, you know, like, oh my God, it's back. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, in the following like 4 years, certainly there was a lot of, sentiment in the opposite direction, yeah. Which is like,
I never completely understood it. I mean, I understand some people are very purist about how they want their Star Trek, but I think that there's room for other interpretations too, especially since they're dealing with the alternate timeline.
And it seems like you, of all people, would kind of understand the value of headcanon and whatnot, and the idea that I'm guessing out of those like 752 books that you've read, that there may be some inconsistencies along the way, maybe here or there.
How many last voyages of the original Enterprise are there? Because I personally have only read
five
books.
I've read about
books,
three.
And there's three of them that I've read.
I've written two of them myself.
Yeah, there's about three of them in the books and two in the comics that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
Or at least that I can recall.
So, Into Darkness comes out. I'm assuming you were excited, right?
I was looking forward to it, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And what did you think after seeing it?
I enjoyed it. It was a fun movie to watch, but I can understand a lot of the criticisms. There were a lot of problems story-wise. I mean, one of the things, like I mentioned, there's no explanation for who Khan is. So people who've never really watched any Star Trek before, when he says, I am Khan, they're going to be like, okay, and?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, but other than that, I mean, I enjoyed the film. It ripped a little bit too much from Star Trek II. I think after I came out of the theater, I tweeted that I remember the last time I watched this, and they called it The Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
And I said they should have given Nicholas Meyer co-writing credit.
I guess so. I guess so. But he didn't get that on Wrath of Khan either, so you know he's used to it. All right. So now let's talk about your website a little bit, Trekkipedia, which people can find at, it's just Trekkipedia.com, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good grab.
So what is this? Yeah, yeah, nice.
Oh, I didn't get it originally. I originally used to have a different name for the site. It started back in the late 90s, and I called it FedNet, because originally it was for my fan fiction stories that I was writing, mostly nice. Voyager, but I started doing some, original series era, and I created the site FedNet to house all of my fan fiction that I was writing. And as I was writing it, it became more and more in-depth, and I realized I needed some kind of an encyclopedia to keep track of everything that goes beyond the encyclopedia. And so I started creating what became Trekkipedia, and that just kind of grew from there. I still have the fan fiction on the site. It's a little harder to find now, but it's still on there. I was testing back about 5 or 6 years back. I was testing the new design where I was using the Trekkipedia name for the first time. And apparently somebody realized that if they type test.fednet, then they could see my test website. And they saw the Trekkipedia name and swooped in on Trekkipedia.com. So I took Trekkipedia.net for several years until they realized I was not going to pay them an exorbitant amount of money to get that domain, and they just let it expire.
Like your Paramount or something.
Yeah. So I just let it expire and snatched it up as soon as it did.
So what exactly is Trekkipedia for those people who don't know?
It's basically the all-encompassing, comprehensive Star Trek encyclopedia that tries to unify all of Star Trek in one place. I think someone else once called it the Grand Unified Theory of Star Trek. Basically, I'm taking all of the TV shows, all the movies, all the animated episodes, the books, the comics, the games, and everything, and bringing it together and trying to make a single narrative for each entry. If there is a conflict or try to resolve it, and I have like a tiered system that I use to try to resolve conflicts and the different entries. So like I'll give priority to the television shows and the movies, then to the animated series, and then to the novels, and then to the comic books, and then to the games. And the games I break up between, you know, the role-playing games and the video games.
It's insane, but I'm awesome.
I'm I've not really poked around it before. I'm a terrible host, and so I'm flipping through it right now, and I'm like, it's a JJ verse timeline that includes the comics. I'm like, oh my god,
I have that. Yes,
that's awesome.
And the all the JJ verse comic books were like co-plotted by Orching and Kurtzman, so they were then directly referenced in Into Darkness. There are actually several lines of dialogue that refer to events in the comic books.
I know. I was so excited.
Yeah, so, I was like, well, you know, then clearly these things must be canon for that timeline. So I included all of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. Now you did this as a reference for yourself originally. Your fan fiction. Yeah. Now, I mean, most people, and I think most of the people writing this other fiction, like the books and the comics and everything like that, most people would be like, let's look at what's canon. We'll pay attention to that. Everything else, screw it. We're just ignoring it.
I run into that a lot.
What was it where with your personal fan fiction where you were like, I want to make sure that this fits in with the books that no one has read?
Well, you know? I've grew up reading those books, and as far as I was concerned, in my mind, they were just as good as everything else. I mean, except for a few problematic early books from The Next Generation, because they were written before the first episode even aired. There were a few times where Picard's characterization was a little strange.
I'd love to read those.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
There was There was one. I think it was like the third novel in, and Picard is like ready to go hunt down and kill some aliens.
Whoa.
Yeah. That sounds like a very
forget
Picard
talking.
Thing to do.
Let's just blow them up.
Yeah, because they kidnapped
children. Kind of movie era Picard, you know?
Yeah, they right. kidnapped some children, and he was going to go hunt them down.
Because Picard loves children so much.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly.
He'll do anything for them.
And so I wanted to try to make something where I could just keep it all straight, and if I then was writing a story where it referred to something, then I would have a reference that I could go to and say, this is all the information that we have on that. And the other thing was that, you know, as much as I love the encyclopedia written by the Akutas, one of the problems I had with it was they made a lot of assumptions on theirs that later found their way into canon, because all the writers would say, well, it's in there, it must be canon. And so then a lot of those assumptions made their way in, like some of the starship numbers from the original series. You never actually saw that on screen until the remastered versions, which were then using the numbers given in the encyclopedia.
Because they made it. Because the Akutas mm-hmm. made yeah.
exactly.
the remastered.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And those were some of the things I didn't care for as much. I mean, in the end, those are kind of small details, but that also the encyclopedia just didn't go far enough. And in mine, if there's something I don't know, I'll just say, you know, we don't know what that is. You know, I'll leave a blank on something, like we have, you know, this ship and we don't know what the registry number is.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm, yeah. Makes sense. So where do you even begin on something like this? I mean, like, you're trying to put together the timeline, and I know you don't need to do it, you know, starting at the beginning and, you know, whatever, but where do you even begin trying to fit this all together?
I started with the cage.
Well, there you
okay.
go.
All That'll right, work. Fair enough. So did you just go through and, like, rewatch all of the episodes? Or
I've gotten through season one of the original for rewatching and taking notes as I'm watching on all the different things to put into it. You know, all the little details right down to Captain Pike's hat sitting on top of his television set.
So how long have you been working on this?
Probably a good 15, 20 years.
And how long does it take you to get through, like, one episode?
At least a week or two.
That's crazy.
And I go through and I take screen caps and do all that.
When you get to, like, a really crappy episode, are you just like, man, these next 2 weeks are gonna suck?
Sometimes I'll slog through them, and then I'll just take a break for a while and go watch something else.
Yeah, understandable.
That's what I do.
But now, what about, like, all of the books and stuff? I mean, now you're going through all this detail in, like, you know, just the original series episodes or whatever. Not to mention all of the other ones yet. It's like, what about all of the books and everything? Is it a type of thing where you're like, I'm going to start at the beginning of these as well? Mm-hmm. Or is it just as you're reading, you're like, okay, I'm taking notes, you know?
I'm doing a little bit of both. I'm going through the newer books as they come out and as I read them. But I've gone back and I've restarted with the Enterprise novels. And I'm up to the Expanse on those right now. I've gone through all the other novels up until that point. That's probably about 7 or 8 novels at this point. And it's one of the things I love is I have, shall we say, acquired copies of the ones I didn't already have on my Kindle. I have hard copies of the ones that I acquired through nefarious mm-hmm. means.
Sure.
But
I know.
I do. I have the photos. I have photos to prove it. But I've gone through, and one of the things I like on my Kindle is that it has a highlight function, and everything I highlight gets copied to a text file.
Oh.
And so then I just go through and I highlight all the little things that I want to pull out for use on the site, and then that goes into a text file, and then I take the text file and import it onto my computer.
Well, that's clever.
So which do you find to be easier to do, the TV show or the books?
The books are far easier to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the right. comics are kind of somewhere in between, because it's basically just going through a series of images.
Mm.
You know, like the old Gold Key episode issues with, you know, the mad scientist who's going to steal the memories of all of Earth's greatest scientists and imprint them on punch cards.
Okay.
Are you doing
a lot of punch cards?
Are you doing for the original series? Are you doing the remastered or the original?
I'm doing the remastered for that.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yes.
I originally I was going to go through and have both side by side.
Of course.
But then I realized that's just too much work.
That's crazy. That would be crazy. That would
I had to draw the line somewhere.
This is a red planet. No, no. Well, in this continuity, it's kind of a different color. It's red and green a little bit, but
the line must be drawn here.
So I guess my next question would be, well, do you have, because I imagine this would be easy to do. And when I say easy, I mean, I'm talking in relative terms, but do you have like a timeline of everything in chronological order, just in terms of like, let's say someone was like, I want to experience Star Trek in chronological order. And I'm not saying like, well, in this episode, there's a flashback that takes place in 22,
just like the order
53.
That the episodes take place.
Yeah. Along with the books and the comics and everything. Do you have like a full list?
Yes.
Excellent.
It's based heavily off of a timeline that someone else made. James Dixon, he posted a timeline years back. And I don't agree with everything in his timeline. That's one of the reasons why ultimately I'm going to be making my own.
Yeah.
Which is another undertaking unto itself. But mostly there are things in there that are, you know, more or less, this is pretty much the order that they take place. And so I've got a spreadsheet and it's got columns for, you know, the star date, the Earth date, the title, the series, and all of that, and color coded by whether it's a book or television or whatever.
Nice.
Just because 13-year-old me needs to know, it's really important. What is the very first adventure, chronologically speaking, on that timeline?
I'd have to look it up. I can't recall.
Okay. All right. Well, it's on the site, right? I can look it up if I need
to. I don't think it's on the site right now. It was on an old version of the site. You might still be able to find it there. I think it was, you know, and if you type in old.trekopedia.com, you might find it.
Okay. All right.
Because I've got a lot of entries on the old version of the site that I'm still converting over to the new one. So there's still a lot of stuff on there. So I just kept it and put it into a subdirectory.
All right. Well, if you can find that out and let me know, it would be greatly appreciated because I need to experience all of it in chronological order from the beginning. No. But okay. So now you've seen everything, I take it, right? You've seen all the episodes of all the shows and you've read what, like, you were saying all the comics or most of the comics?
I've read all of the comics.
You've read all of the comics and you've read most of the books.
Yes.
Okay. What do you consider to be like the best comic or storyline, comic book storyline? Or like what is somewhere where like you're just like, you got to check this one out. Like, I'm not saying like you need to like figure out what the Citizen Kane of the comic books is, but you need to kind of like, you know, where you're like, you guys, you know, like for people who maybe are lost and, you know, are just reading whatever's coming out now or whatever. Is there one where you're just like, this is one here where, you know, this is it. I've read them all. And I know like you, if you're a Star Trek fan or just a fan of good comics, you need to check this one out.
Well, I really enjoyed the Mirror Universe saga back in the 80s. Mm-hmm. That one took place in between, I think it was Star Trek 3 and 4. Mm. And Spock was back, and he'd just gotten his memory restored. And they came up with this really cool storyline where Spock was actually given command of a science ship, and Kirk got command of the Excelsior. Mirror Kirk comes from the Mirror Universe with the Mirror Enterprise, which was still around, and comes over to the regular universe to try to basically, as the lead vanguard for an invasion of the regular universe by the mirror universe. And hijinks ensue, and Kirk takes the place of Mirror Kirk, sets him up, makes it look like he betrayed the Empire, and in the end, the Empire is gunning for Mirror Kirk.
Wow.
Now, I take it this was written before Star Trek IV was released?
It was released in between the two movies, and it ends with Spock being injured in such a way that his mind got all screwed up after a mind meld with Mirror Spock, and they had to take him back to Vulcan.
Oh my God. That's clever.
That's clever in the most convoluted way imaginable, but I guess that's what you got to do to tell that story, then okay. Because mm-hmm. that does sound awesome, but I'd be like, let's just make that Star Trek 4, you know? I have nothing against Star Trek.
It was
Trek
great, 4. And it would have saved them so much on the actors because, you know, all the villains are played by the
right.
same character.
But you have to pay twice as much.
That's true. Mm. So, okay, same question then, but for the novels.
I really enjoy the Vanguard novels.
Yeah. They just came out recently, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've been coming out for about the last 10 years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, okay. Hard to believe it's been quite that long, but it's like the last 9 or 10 years, I think, when the first one came out. And now they're doing the Seekers series, which follows off.
And these
that.
Are TOS era. So this is the TOS era one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's basically the original series answer to Deep Space Nine.
Ooh, interesting.
Right. Like Vanguard is sort of like the darker one, and then Seekers is like, hey, let's
like
have
Voyager.
Fun again, right?
Yeah. Vanguard is set on a space station in the Taurus Reach, and the first one takes place right after Where No Man Has Gone Before.
I will have to check
and
this out.
It actually has the Enterprise docking with the station for repairs after the events of Where No Man Goes Before.
That's great.
That's cool. Yeah. So, okay. I guess this is my last question. As someone who has seen and read all this stuff or whatever, is there like one thing where you were like, I wish this was not this. If I could just erase this from history, either it would make my life so much easier, or you know, the whole canon would work better. Like, what would that be?
There's a few of those.
Yeah,
a few of them are from some of those early Next Generation novels that I was talking about, because they just don't fit very well at all. The only way that I can really explain them is saying that they happen in an alternate timeline.
Sure, why not?
Yeah.
The author doesn't have to know it's an alternate timeline.
Sure.
Yeah, because there's one that ends with Dr. Salar taking a kid, like an orphaned Andorian kid, and resigning from Starfleet and going off back to Vulcan to raise this kid. But, you know, Salar gets mentioned a few more times in later episodes, and then is a regular on the New Frontier novels.
Well,
none
she
of
just
that
had
happened.
She mind melded with someone and it messed up her mind, and then she had to go back. You know, whatever. It's all good. Interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah, wow. I mean, it's just a few things like that. There's, you know, some good books out there, and there's a few that are not as good.
I can imagine. So this is kind of like a life project, I'm assuming, something which...
It's looking like it. I'm not even halfway through, and I've been working on this for probably a good 10 or 15 years.
That's awesome.
But I studied history in college, and so I'm using all the stuff that I learned for writing papers as an historian and applying that to writing the article. So I'm writing this from an in-universe perspective as if it's an actual encyclopedia entry written by an historian.
That's awesome.
With and like what... annotations, footnotes, everything.
And like, what are some of the articles that you have on there? Like, what are some that people who haven't been to the site should definitely check out? You know?
One of the ones that's most in-depth is the Constitution class entry.
As it should be.
And... As it should be, yes. And One thing I like is the I've got tabs for, you know, the different sections. So like I've got a tab for original configuration, a tab for refit configuration, and then a tab for known vessels with just a spreadsheet listing every Constitution class ship that's ever been mentioned.
Cool.
And man, links to them. And they also have pages.
That's so great.
Like on the Enterprise, this is linked from that, and I've got like on the Enterprise, I've got just all the information about the Enterprise and references, like a page and a half long. and the Enterprise A, I've even got a note talking about the conflicting reports of whether or not the ship was originally named something else first and what that ship was named, because most of the sites or most of the sources that I've got say that yes, it was another ship first, but then there are three different names that were given. You know, one says it was the USS Atlantis, one was the USS Tiho, and one was the Yorktown. And the first two names come from games, and the third comes from the Next Generation Technical Manual, so that's the one that I went with.
Yeah. Good call.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, yeah. Well, awesome. Well, where can people find the website and everything? Where can people check it out if they want to, which they should?
It's Trekopedia.com.
Trekopedia.com. Simple enough. And where can people find you on the internet outside of Warp 5 or whatever?
Outside of Warp 5, I'm also on, I'm on Facebook, I'm on the Babel Conference, I'm on the Axanar fan group all the time, and, I also have my, my comic books that I make are also on there, so, you know, on top of my day job and Trekopedia, I also make comic books, and,
What are your comic books?
It's called The Protectorate, and it's, basically, it's, set in a world where there have been people with superpowers since the Korean War, but there are almost no superheroes because everybody, when they reach 18 years old, to get drafted. Because why spend billions of dollars on making weapon systems when you can just draft them?
Interesting. That sounds cool.
And so my comic is following a bunch of high school seniors and a couple of college freshmen who are exempted from the draft at this point. And they found a leap. One of them, his father's a billionaire, and they found a loophole in the law that lets them avoid the draft completely.
So where can people find that? That sounds cool.
That's on my also on Facebook or the website's bandwidthcomics.com. I've got four issues out. I just recently finished coloring the first issue. The first four were originally in black and white, but now the first issue's in color. And I'm working on getting that up for sale right now.
Cool.
Excellent. Excellent.
And that's also going to be, I've submitted that to Comixology, so hopefully that'll be up there soon, too.
I'll grab it.
Oh, that'd be sweet. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that sounds like a really interesting concept. Yeah. Well, cool. Well, thank you very much for joining us today.
It was enlightening.
It was, you know, I just want to sit around and, you know, what I really want to do is just like have, you know, your number in my phone so that I can text you whenever needed, because you never know, and just be like, so how does this fit in? You know, what about this comic? Should I read this thing? No? Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
You know, there was actually a Voyager comic where they faced down one of the Doomsday Machines, too.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I got overwhelmed. I was looking at Star Trek comics the other day, and that box set that has them all on PDF. And it's you know, here's 10,000 comics, every single comic before IDW. And I'm like, oh, my God.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
I've got everything since IDW got the license, too, except for the stuff that maybe just came out in the last month or two.
Yeah.
And that I just have to go to the comic shop and get it out of my pull box.
Excellent. Still buying the hard copies, not the digital ones, huh?
I get both.
Oh, of course. Of course.
It's not surprising. I don't know why I'm surprised at that.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. Yeah, we really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Even though I get called out on saying that all the time, but whatever.
We do appreciate it.
Yeah, we do. We do. Yeah, yeah. Get off our backs. We appreciate it. You know, whatever. But yeah, yeah. We hope to have you back on the show again soon.
Yeah, I'd love it.
Well, that was fun talking with Jeff about Trekkopedia today, but that's just one of the Trek topics we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
So Nicholas Meyer, hearing that, immediately starts getting inspiration. So like, let's do Chernobyl in space. Let's do The Wall Comes Down in space. And it just sort of comes out of Nicholas Meyer. You know, let's comment on, you know, how would Kirk feel about this? And all these sorts of issues.
Earl Grey.
Yeah, really, she's following the Hasbrat, I think, is really what it is.
Come for the revolution, stay for the Hasbrat.
But it's got to be fresh Hasbrat. None of that replicated stuff.
Like, Daniel's like, at the watching the end of this episode, like, tears are coming down the face. It's like, no, it's the Hasbrat. It's so spicy. It's what it is.
The Orb.
Well, apparently, and did you find this interesting, Matthew? Apparently, the Navark reports directly to the prophets.
Which is awkward, because they don't always show up for meetings, so...
Right.
Yeah.
Plus, you never know what time the meeting is really going to be, right?
That is true. It could have been yesterday, and you might have missed it.
The Ready Room.
Do you think this episode would have been so popular and remain a fan favorite if the Enterprise had been overrun with zebra mussels?
To the journey! Why is he wearing the toga? Now, is he going to a frat party, or is he being Julius Caesar? Either way, it's weird.
Don't you know Tristan's fascination with late 20th century university social groups?
Warp 5.
It kind of like is akin to when fans saw the Galaxy class in The Next Generation for the very first time, and you had basically a crew and civilian complement of, what, over 1,000 people? About two-thirds of that complement were civilians and their families. So you actually did have teachers and scholars and scientists and their extended families on board.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
One of the things that amazes me about the score for Star Trek The Motion Picture is that he only had 50% of the movie available to him when he scored. So he was scoring an awful lot to scene missing.
The 602 Club.
Where did he get the cloak from on the other planet? I really, really, really want to know. He shows up with the cloak.
He kind of fashioned it out of a rudimentary lathe.
Literary Treks.
It's a small point, but I thought it was really interesting to have here in the book, because, again, that's what Star Trek Deep Space Nine has really always done for Star Trek, which is kind of make faith okay in the Star Trek universe and show how it's valid. And so I thought that was a really nice, in it, again, it's a tiny point in the book, but I thought it was pretty powerful, at least for me, who is somebody who is a faith. So
Axanar, the official podcast.
It is the spirit of TOS that matters, that's being captured, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the aesthetic. The aesthetic was 1966 to 1969. That had its moment. It had its time. And there's a certain amount of charm still to that. But it doesn't allow you to push the narrative forward, because that type of aesthetic holds creativity back, in my opinion.
Women at Warp.
There's so many things that I've got to do.
Yeah.
I got to pilot the Defiant. You know, I got to sit in the chair. Mm-hmm. That was a big deal.
Yeah.
And Renee would always say, "Nanai, you know this isn't real. I mean, you're so excited to be in the chair. It's not actually happening."
That's exciting.
Yeah, it was exciting.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get in on the Daily Trek Talk. You find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, or you can just stream from the website. Just visit trek.fm/podcast to get all the links. Well, if you want to contact us and share your thoughts on today's show, you can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose Send a Show and choose Standard Orbit. That'll come to both of us by email. You can also use the tab on the left-hand column of any page to send us a voicemail using webcam's microphone. And you can talk to us and our other listeners at our Facebook group, The Babel Conference. In social media, you'll find our Facebook page at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm.
You can find Mike on Twitter at Mumbles3K, and you can find him on his own website, Commentary Track Stars, and here on Trek FM on Commentary Track Stars. And you can find me on Twitter at 005, DOUBLEOFIVE. Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor, who helps bring Standard Orbit to each week. And our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers and even some of the most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive and Federation, Audible has something for everyone. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial just to see how great Audible is. So give it a try today, catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Standard Orbit and Trek FM. We'd also like to thank Richard Rutledge Jr. and Renee Roberts for being our associate producers this week by supporting us on Patreon. You can find Richard on Twitter at RUT8972 and Renee at MRES_1701. And if you want to help them keep us in orbit, you can also support us on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find a list of donation levels where you can get things like exclusive digital goodies, early access to episodes, access to our project manager, and even be listed as an associate producer for our shows. You'll find out where the donations can go, things like covering the monthly cost of hosting and distribution, hiring an editor for our shows, and upgrading our equipment. Again, that's patreon.com/trekfm, so check it out. Well, everybody, thanks for listening. Have a good week and keep on trekking. It is the will of Landru.
Mr. Chekhov, take us out of orbit. Ahead, warp factor 1.
Aye, sir.